What is the most important e-discovery issue today?
Cost control?
Technology-assisted review?
Information management?
Preservation?
From the latest cases to the newest technologies.
Our goal is to expose legal professionals to the most important e-discovery trends
with the brightest e-discovery experts.
Rulemaking,
predictive coding,
litigation hold,
portionality,
document review,
social media,
efficiency,
ethics,
cooperation.
Welcome to the ESI Report, sponsored by Kroll On Track, an e-discovery software and service provider. You are listening to the Legal Talk Network.
Hi, I'm Michelle Lang, and welcome to the ESI Report. If your organization was suddenly plunged into litigation, would you have the tools and processes in place to respond appropriately to discovery requests? Where would you start when it came to data preservation and collection? Would you be able to initiate a defensible legal hold? And would you know when your organization could confidently delete data again? Many organizations find themselves in this exact situation, facing these critical questions when litigation looms. Here today to talk about preservation, collection, and all things left-hand EDRM is Kathleen Peterson. Kathleen is a senior vice president at Kroll On Track, where she leads the consulting and advanced review services teams. She is a former attorney at Orrick, Harrington, and Sutcliffe, and WilmerHale. Kathleen has deep experience in all things e-discovery, including records management, collection and preservation strategies, technology-assisted review, and regulatory compliance. Kathleen, so glad to have you join me on the ESI Report today.
Thank you, Michelle. Happy to be here.
So let's go ahead and jump right in, talking about preservation and collection today on the ESI Report. Perhaps you could give listeners a little bit of background on why data preservation is so critical to the discovery process when it comes to civil litigation, and where does this preservation duty stem for litigating parties?
Sure, Michelle, I'm happy to. The duty to preserve stems from both the federal rules of civil procedure and from common law developments intended to preserve evidence that's potentially relevant to litigation. In 1970, the federal rules of civil procedure were amended such that the word document is now considered to be any tangible thing, and commentary explicitly extended that to electronically stored information, thus the birth of the beginnings of e-discovery and the duty to preserve electronic evidence.
So the fundamental challenge in e-discovery is proportionality. It's this balancing between burden versus benefit. How do you advise organizations to balance the cost and the burdens of over-collecting too much electronically stored information versus the threat of sanctions for data loss due to improper preservation or not enough preservation and collection?
That's an excellent question, Michelle. The challenge with preservation is often you don't have a do-over. So you either get preservation right at the beginning, where it's hard to recreate the wheel. If data is destroyed, it may truly be lost and lost to both parties. The world of sanctions for failure to preserve is an extreme outcome. Recent amendments to the federal rules were approved. The U.S. Judicial Conference approved in September some amendments to the federal rules that make the most extreme sanctions for failure to preserve to be the rare case where a party really shows willful misconduct and an intent to deprive the opposing party of access to that evidence. That said, there are still real and serious implications for failure to preserve. Those may be, in all cases, trying to recreate access to that data, be it from backups, from other sources, from rewinding the wheel of time to try to recover any lost data or the nearest thing to that lost data. And that can be an incredibly expensive, time-consuming process. And it can also raise questions about the effectiveness of counsel, the credibility of the client. There are a lot of soft softer but true negative outcomes from failure to preserve at the beginning. And so in looking at the scope of required preservation, one would want to look at the risks of a negative outcome if that preservation isn't conducted in a prudent, reasonable way, and also consider the fact that if preservation is accomplished effectively at the outset, it can lead to a more cost-effective, more streamlined process for discovery as a whole. Once a client puts reasonable bounds about where the likely relevant evidence resides in their enterprise, developing a plan to preserve that evidence either in place through collecting the evidence or through some combination of both can facilitate a well-managed litigation. It can control costs, and it can get to an outcome that both serves the client itself and also leads to a least disruptive litigation flow.
And so one of the tactics that organizations can use to make sure that they have the proper preservation protocols in place is this concept of a legal hold. It's sort of one of the buzzy terms in the e-discovery industry right now. Can you help our listeners understand what a legal hold is, first of all? And secondly, what are the important building blocks for creating an efficient and, most importantly, a defensible legal hold process?
Sure, absolutely. So the notion of a legal hold is putting all potential parties who may have relevant evidence on notice that litigation is either in existence or it's anticipated. And this is an important point. The duty to preserve and thus the issuance of a legal hold isn't necessarily the first thing that happens when a lawsuit is filed. It may well need to happen before a lawsuit is filed. So if one is a defendant and anticipates that they are about to be sued, either from the receipt of a summons, official notice of a government investigation, or a specific threat to file a lawsuit, that's when it can be considered that litigation is reasonably anticipated and the obligation to preserve and thus the need to issue a legal hold is triggered. Now, it doesn't need to be some generalized, this class of people might at some point file a suit. It needs to be more particular than that typically. But once that is triggered, it's time to take action. Now, when one's a plaintiff, that may be when that plaintiff is actually considering filing a lawsuit, retaining a lawyer, investigating specific claims. So the notion of putting out a legal hold means advising employees, advising potential third parties, advising IT, and anyone who may touch potentially relevant evidence or be in charge of maintaining that evidence, that a lawsuit is reasonably anticipated. This is the scope of the kind of data and documents that may be relevant, and these things need to be preserved. This can also mean suspending routine auto-deletion policies in email or in other systems that may inadvertently cause data to be lost.
And everyone these days is talking about information governance. You know, you talk about implementing that legal hold early on, even before, once you have anticipation of some sort of suit or investigation. How does that interact with a company's information governance or document retention programs that they already have in place, theoretically? And if they don't have anything in place, how does not having something like that in place implement the legal hold process when it comes to preservation?
That's a good question. So one of the best things about having a reasonable document retention or information governance policy, and sometimes that governs how long certain types of data is maintained, having that policy in place and routine processes in place has historically been a good defense for a claim of spoliation of evidence. If evidence is lost because of the routine action of a document retention system or triggers in the network itself, that's a complete defense for past data loss. Now, That said, it's difficult to maintain an updated record retention policy that engenders compliance across the company. There are a lot of companies who struggle with that, who don't have a policy or whose policy is out of date or is not enforced. That can complicate preservation. In a world where there is no policy, you don't have that defense. When you put data on legal hold, if you don't have a good process for managing those holds, and if it's a company that's subject to repeat or serial litigation in particular, individual employees or custodians may be on a number of holds, which, if not properly managed, can basically mean that certain data sets are just kept forever and continue to grow and grow and grow, and what is already a big data problem for that client now becomes a bigger data problem because it's so complex and interwoven with competing legal hold obligations.
And I can imagine that keeping those, you know, records retention policies and even a legal hold, both of those need to take account for emerging technologies as well. So as new technologies are brought into the organization, either willingly and officially fostered by the IT department or sometimes a little rogue, if you think about things like Facebook and instant messaging systems and all of the things that we can do on our phone via apps, especially if that's a work-issued, an employer-issued phone, how do organizations get their arms around, A, making sure that their record retention policy is accurate and fair and defensible, and then keeping up to date with emerging technology?
Yeah, it is a challenge. And it's a good reason that these policies should not only be created in a way that's understandable and can be implemented, but should also get a tune-up, probably on at least an annual basis, to take stock of how employees are saving their data, how that intersects with obligations to preserve data. And it might not just be legal hold, it may be a regulatory requirement to preserve, or a business requirement to preserve data related to contracts, for example, or what have you. That said, it can get very complex. Both the social media example that you raised, Michelle, and with cloud-based storage, personal devices, there are a lot of complexities here, and those records retention policies or information governance policies should be updated and should be fine-tuned with the requirements of both the business and any legal or regulatory requirements to make sure that they're consistent, those policies are consistent with how employees are operating and what's required by the litigation holds. That litigation hold is both an obligation of both the client and the client's counsel. There is case law that suggests that counsel has an obligation to make sure those holds are issued effectively, that custodians are regularly reminded of their duty to hold on to data. And so it just highlights the need to have a full, thoughtful, well-coordinated process.
So that raises a good question. Once you implement the legal hold and you've got a good handle on preservation, collection, data is reviewed, produced to the opposing party or regulatory agency, how do you know when it's okay to lift a legal hold? And what does defensible deletion look like to an organization, given everything you just talked about with regards to the obligations of both the litigating party but also counsel?
Yeah, and it's a good question and sometimes overlooked question. I can't tell you how many times I've seen litigations end, but employees not released from hold. And so data lingers longer than it needs to. And when the next lawsuit arises, data that would have otherwise been relegated to the trash heap because it was no longer needed still exists. And so now it's subject to search again, increasing the cost and burden of the next discovery. So it's important that there be a formal end to the legal hold process. Typically that happens either when a case is finally settled, and by that, finally, and a formal release issued and filed with the court, so the case is at an end, or in the case of a judgment, the appeals period has fully run so that the case cannot revive, or in the case of a dismissal, make sure the case is dismissed with prejudice and there are no lingering claims. Once the case disappears, one should issue a formal lifting of the hold, generally in the same manner as when the hold was issued, to make sure that it's delivered to each custodian who was on hold, that there's follow-up with third parties, follow-up with IT, and that that data can then be disposed of. And, you know, in the same vein, the struggle that companies are facing with data accumulating and accumulating, even if they adopt a records management system or policy going forward, often there are large repositories of older data that they haven't yet grappled with and should grapple with. There are technologies that can be used to map that data to records management policies, use predictive coding or other technology to reduce that data to the subset that is meaningful for long-term storage and preservation, and then get rid of the rest.
So let's talk a little bit about technology. You touched on it just briefly there within that last discussion. What is the role that technology plays in preservation and the litigation hold process? And specifically, as the leader of a consulting organization yourself, talk a little bit about how organizations such as yours fits into the mix.
Sure. So on a couple of points, the first point is the logistics of issuing and monitoring a litigation hold. In the old world, litigation hold notices were often even circulated by means of a paper notice to employees. Then we moved from that to email, where an email notice went out often once to an employee. We moved from there to a world where an occasional reminder email was sent. And there are challenges with governing legal holds with emails. It's very difficult to track who's received it or who's acknowledged receipt of it. It's cumbersome to try to maintain an inventory of the breadth of the distribution, what parties have it, and to follow up if there are subsequent updates to the litigation hold notice, which there may be if claims either broaden or narrow. So litigation hold technologies have been developing over the past several years and have now really come to a nice maturity in the market. Some of the clients that I've seen have invested in an enterprise technology where they can bring the technology behind their firewall and run the technology themselves. The challenge that many clients face with that is it can be very both expensive from a hardware and software standpoint and disruptive in terms of integrating yet a new IT piece of software and system behind the firewall. So many companies, even large companies, have solutions that either don't accomplish all of their legal hold needs in terms of subsequent employee interviews and other things, or they don't have the systems at all or only have them for portions of the company. So what we at Crow on Track decided to do was license from KQura their Relativity legal hold product. And we now have integrated that into our eDiscovery offerings. And Crow on Track's Relativity legal hold product is a perfect solution for clients who would like an accessible, low-cost way to issue legal holds, manage those holds through a client-facing portal where they can log in, have a full inventory of the employees who are on legal hold. They can create the templates very simply with counsel or with consulting help on the portal. They can track and maintain, receive acknowledgments, send automated reminders, have escalations to employee supervisors, even create the custodian interview templates for subsequent potential collection activity through the portal. And this is a way that clients can manage this process at a very low price point without the IT investment or business disruption of bringing in an enterprise solution. So what our consulting team does to assist with that is help design the process. We can help update records management policies in conjunction with the client's counsel. We can help design or implement the legal hold notices or reminders, keep track of those activities, report on the activities, participate in building custodian interview templates, assist with the documentation of those interviews or performing the interviews. There's just a great range of services around legal hold that are often much smoother and much easier to implement with a modest amount of consulting assistance.
Well, Kathleen, I think I'll leave it there. That was excellent. Thank you so much for joining me on the ESI Report today.
My pleasure, Michelle. Thank you so much.
Well, that wraps up another edition of the ESI Report. Thank you to everyone listening, and thanks to Kroll OnTrack for sponsoring the show. If you want to make sure that you are in the eDiscovery know, check out the eDiscovery.com website or follow Kroll OnTrack on the eDiscoveryblog.com. Until next time, I'm Michelle Lang, signing off for the ESI Report.
This was another edition of the ESI Report, sponsored by Kroll OnTrack. Be sure to follow Kroll OnTrack on Facebook and Twitter, or learn more about Kroll OnTrack software and services at www.krolontrack.com. Thanks for listening to the ESI Report, produced by the broadcast professionals at Legal Talk Network. Join Michelle Lang for her next podcast on the latest e-discovery trends. Subscribe to the RSS feed on LegalTalkNetwork.com or in iTunes. The views expressed by the participants of this program are their own and do not represent the views of, nor are they endorsed by, Legal Talk Network, its officers, directors, employees, agents, representatives, shareholders, and subsidiaries. None of the content should be considered legal advice. As always, consult a lawyer.